Does the current dire state of the economy have you totally upset and confused? There are solutions to our financial ills, but first we have to get a handle on what's really going on. I'm Ellen Brown, author of Web of Debt and a new radio show host here on PRN FM, inviting you to join me and my co-host, Walt McCree, as we look behind the curtain at the shadowy world of global monetary control and what we can do to break ourselves free. The show is called It's Our Money, and it airs on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking with experts in the world of monetary policy, as well as with people who are actively working to reclaim control of public money to benefit the public interest. So please join us for It's Our Money, Wednesdays on PRN FM or by podcast.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia?
Started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back at PRN for another hour, 5 to 6 p.m. on Eastern Time on Thursdays, and podcast all over the world. That was Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the wonderful songwriter. The song won a Grammy on the album Tomorrow's Children. We're going to talk about nuclear power today. Linda Seeley, you with us yet? Not yet. Paul Gunter, how about you?
Hi, Harvey. No nukes.
No nukes to you, Paul. So Linda may join us from San Luis Obispo, but Paul, you and I have a full hour to go through the amazing developments in the nuclear power industry. There is a long list, and they're all pretty much to our benefit, although there is some negative stuff. But I have to start today. I have to keep my composure. The grandson of one of my best friends from when I was a child, and I knew Steve from the time.
Sorry about that. Hold on a second here. I'm having a hard time with this, and I'll get it.
Sorry, Harvey.
Still with me? Paul, you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry, listeners. You're going to have to bear with me.
It sounds like you lost
the grandson of a guy I grew up with was killed in the Florida massacre.
It's so senseless.
It's just endless. And this scumbag in the White House has dared to blame the victims. I mean, it's just, you know, we are in serious trouble here. The Second Amendment does not guarantee everybody the right to own a gun. The Second Amendment had very clear purpose, which was to protect the militias. It was written by James Madison, who was a slave owner. And there were two basic functions for the Second Amendment, and they have to do with militias. The United States was formed, and we defeated the British with well-armed, well-regulated militias, which all armed with single-shot, hard-to-load muskets. And these people knew each other. These were neighborhood organizations or, you know, in rural communities. And the Second Amendment says the well-regulated militia, being
necessary to the security of the free state. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So there's an assumption that you have a right to keep and bear arms, but only if you belong to a militia. And if you can demonstrate that your right to bear arms has, that you're bearing in arms serves the security of a free state. So these people running around, led by, you know, this mafia guy in the White House, who is serving the interests of the gun industry, are claiming a constitutional right for any idiot and any insane person to own a semi-automatic weapon, you know, that can kill God knows how many people, including my friend's grandson, with impunity. And it's all about profit. It's all about money. It's all driven by the gun industry. The reality is that this slaughter in Florida made money for the gun industry. They made money on the bullets. They made money on the weapon. And now other people are going to go out and buy weapons to so-called protect themselves and to get ahead of the curve in case gun control actually does come in. And so, you know, these gun, anybody who thinks that they're not going to be affected personally, you know, within the 6 degrees of separation or whatever it is deluding yourself. And so,
yeah, you know, well, I saw the news today is that there have been like 24 of these mass shootings in the first 6 weeks of 2018.
Right.
I mean, it's the fact that access is so easy and so expedited that without any background check, that you can become a front page figure by trying to set a new record of how many people you can massacre. You know, I know that, you know, I completely agree with you on the whole issue of how the Second Amendment has been perverted. But what's additionally perverting this is that sick people have figured out how they can become a personality by these insane acts. Hello?
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 Harvey, you there? Harvey?
Yeah, we got cut off somehow.
All right, you're up.
Paul?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, and I agree with you. And I mean, the sickest person involved in this is the guy in the White House. I mean, for him to come out with a statement that does not mention gun control and that blames the victims is, you know, that we keep getting to new depths here. You know, it's bad enough that we have had slaughter after slaughter after slaughter. But to have a guy who is presumed to be the president of the United States, who had money laundered to his campaign through the National Rifle Association from the Russians, presume to blame the victims here. You know, it's one thing Trump has taught us is there seems to be no bottom to outrage. For most of us, I think that the shock is of course that we have a guy this bad in the White House, but even that a guy like this even exists. You know, I never met anybody even remotely as horrible as this person. And now, you know, I don't know if all of you have any friends or relatives who've been harmed in a gun incident like this, you know, but the numbers keep mounting and the odds are that, you know, everybody listening to the show is sooner than later going to lose somebody. And, you know, this is my best friend from growing up, his grandson. And, you know, it's just, and to imagine who that you could lose, you know, Paul and everybody else listening to this, you don't get over this. You never recover from this. My friend's wife he will never recover from this. And no. It's just Okay, so there you go. I don't know, Linda, have you joined us? Linda, she may have lost track of time here.
No,
well, Paul, you and I. Oh, Linda, you are here?
I'm here.
Okay. So I don't know how much of this you heard, but I can barely
speak. I heard
speak.
It all. I know.
Well, so I'll have to regain my composure and talk about something sane like nuclear power. God.
Another loose cannon.
Yeah, really. And, you know, those of us who have had cancer or cancer scares, who have lost people to cancer, we have every right to suspect that many, many, many people of the close to us personally have been harmed or died from radiation from nuclear weapons and nuclear power plants. And but thankfully, we seem to be on the downbound side of the curve on this, and that's what let's talk
You'd
about.
You'd hope so.
Yeah,
you know, I wanted to share something with Linda now on the line. Is, you know, I know Linda Seeley's out there in California, you know, sort of earthquake central. But, you know, in the last week, we've had two earthquakes, one 8 miles from Indian Point, and this morning, one 6 miles from Seabrook. Both of these were low magnitude. They were only about 2.2 magnitude earthquakes, but within a week we've had two earthquakes with epicenters very close to nuclear power stations. And this is the it's a concern that it's all a guessing game. You know, we have nuclear power stations now coming closer and closer to closure, but it's going to be a race to, you know, to close these things down before they melt down. That's the big concern.
And blow up. And, you know, the problem we have, one of the problems we have is, first of all, we have a completely irresponsible idiot in the White House. And so we can't count, even less now, can we count or even think about any meaningful regulation coming from the federal government. And the NRC, which we've called no real chance for the last 30 or 40 years, is going to be worse than ever with every passing day. And the reactors themselves become worse and worse as they deteriorate and major pieces fall apart. And, you know, it's like my old Volvos. They were wonderful cars. The nuclear power plants are never wonderful. My Volvo was wonderful way back when, but it's a 1992. It's, what, 36 years old now. And we reached a point where we can't even think about fixing it anymore. And so we're racing to shut these old reactors, which get more and more dangerous and less regulated. So, Linda,
some of the issues you can't really fix either. Like, you know, this earthquake, it was in Kingston, New Hampshire this morning. And as I mentioned, 2.2 on the Richter scale. But for the last several years we've been monitoring the deterioration of concrete for the containment structure at Seabrook and the spent fuel pool. These concrete structures, when they were poured, they lost quality control of the aggregate going into the concrete. Mm-hmm. So today, it's estimated that these safety-related structures at Seabrook have lost probably about 30% of their compression and tensile strength. And so you throw a reminder like an earthquake into the fact that these facilities are degrading. And again, it's this writing on the wall that we're in a race. We need to win.
Oh, God, we have no choice. And, of course, your compatriot at the Beyond Nuclear, Paul Gunter, Kevin Camps, has done just an incredible job of analyzing the containment at Davis-Besse, which we will get to Davis-Besse in a minute near Toledo, which appears like it's on its way to shutting down. But, the very first reactor damaged by an earthquake in the United States was Perry in Ohio, not far from Davis-Besse.
And you know, God forbid any of these reactors to get take a more direct hit from an earthquake. You know, we're all just toast. So, Linda Seeley, you're going to have to leave. And I, Del Paul, who's such an incredible wealth of information on nuclear power, we wanted to talk to you first. Well, he'll be with us the full hour. We want to talk to you first about the latest at Diablo Canyon. You're with the Mothers for Peace, frequent guest on this show, and a veteran of the movement there for more decades than we care to remember. What is happening now at the two reactors at San Luis Obispo, and what is our prospect for setting them early?
I think our prospect is pretty good for shutting them early. That's my optimistic mind talking to you, though, Harvey. It's because we Mothers for Peace made a very good case in the Public Utilities Commission about PG&E has agreed to shut down Diablo, but with the proviso that that we have enough replacement power for the amount that's needed to replace Diablo that comes from renewable energy. So we already have enough renewable energy online in California today. Mothers for Peace was very, very conservative in its estimates, and we used Robert Freeling, a great energy analyst, to do our analysis for us. And he said that for sure by 2020 we'll have plenty of replacement power for the amount that's needed for the shutdown of Diablo. So the judge and the Public Utilities Commission noted in analysis, the report that they wrote, that our argument was very significant, and the PG&E has talked already about shutting the plants, the two reactors, down before 2024 and 25. The thing that you mentioned, Paul, with our reactor vessel in Unit 1 at Diablo Canyon is the third most embrittled reactor vessel in the whole U.S. And you think about having a brittle reactor vessel on 13 earthquake faults, and that is really not a very good formula for safety. So we want to get these things closed down ASAP. The other thing that we're looking at here is the fact that people are leaving. The younger workers out there, because the Public Utilities Commission didn't allow the 25% bonus that PG&E promised to all the workers before they signed the agreement. They promised all the workers that they'd get a yearly 25% bonus, and then the PUC said, "Oh no, you can't do that. That's irresponsible." So they allowed them to give a 15% bonus to the workers, but the workers are looking, you know, ahead to 10, 20 years ahead of now. And if they get offered good jobs, you know, they're bound to be going away from that plant. And I was at a meeting last week with the Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee and PG&E. My question was, how many operators do you have to have there at the plant in order for you to run it safely? And if you go one under that number that you have to have to run for safety, will you close it down? And PG&E, well, they couldn't answer that question because they said, well, you know, we've got operators who are trained as operators, but they're not working as operators. They're doing other things. And if we have an emergency where we don't have enough operators, we can call somebody in. And I made the remark to them, well, you know, I'm a medical professional, and I am, you know, trained in certain things. And if I go to work in another area, I kind of forget the things that I've been trained with initially, and I can't just walk right back into that job without some tuning up. And I think the same should be probably is true for a nuclear power plant operator. So we have a lot of we have a lot of issues here.
Well, so and Paul, of course, Paul Gunter of Beyond Nuclear and Linda Seeley from the Mothers for Peace and San Luis Obispo. This is an industry-wide problem, and you have an aging, not only an aging workforce, but a workforce that probably could comprise an AARP chapter. I mean, young people have not been going into nuclear power for a long time. All these reactors now are facing shutdown. There must be a huge brain drain going on at all these reactors around the country. Paul, can you comment on that?
I think that as the industry retires its workforce, clearly the new blood is not coming in through nuclear engineering university programs. It's primarily coming in through the military, but naval propulsion submarine operators, that kind of thing. But there's not a balance. There's not an equity there. They are losing their workforce. And not only are they losing workforce, but they're also losing a lot of that institutional memory. So there's, there are problems there that they're just not well understood as if you didn't go through it. And a lot of what people also don't understand is that the same is going on over at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that there's not a balance there of a new workforce coming in to replace the retiring workforce. So you've got that brain drain that you mentioned. At the same time, you've got these plants getting older, there are just a lot of different clear and present dangers now presenting themselves, not only with aging but with security. You know, we've found malware now popping up in nuclear power stations that suggest that there are bad guys trying to probe security networks for nuclear power stations as well as operational systems. So
this
is an inherently dangerous technology that's not only aging, but it's presenting itself as sort of a low, as I won't say low hanging fruit, but it does present itself with an enhanced radiological target.
Well, I was actually told, and I don't know if this is true, maybe you know, Paul or Linda, that some of these old reactors are still using computers with floppy disks. Is that possible?
Some of them have been upgraded, but they are, a lot of them are still analog systems. That might not be as bad as if they were all on digital, which makes them more likely and vulnerable to malware or hacking, but there's still these concerns that you can also bring viruses and worms into a power plant on a external hard drive if you're a bad guy that works at the plant. And that's, we've seen people who turned out to be bank robbers working in nuclear power stations around Chicago. So it has to do with the fact that in the 21st century, we should be abandoning inherently dangerous technologies for, renewable energy, energy efficiency and conservation that don't need emergency planning zones, that don't need defense in depth and don't need security guards to that extent.
I think the bank robber, that occurred at Al Capone Unit 1 outside of Chicago. So
yeah.
Linda, do you see any firm indication that PG&E wants to shut Diablo by 2020?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But I'll let you know as soon as I do.
Yeah. Call me and Paul as soon as you hear, will you?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah, for sure, I'll call you.
I mean, I guess it's conceivable that they won't even have a sufficient workforce to continue operations at these two reactors until 2024 and 25. I mean, they
can run out of people. Plus, they have so many repairs that there's, but these are old plants, like Paul said, and the piping and the concrete and, you know, this and that. There's a $158 million repair to a stator, which is part of the generator that the steam, diesel generator thing that is supposed to be made, was supposed to be made starting about at least 8 years ago, and they've put it off and put it off and put it off. It's not a nuclear, it's not on the nuclear side of operation, but if that thing goes down, they can't run the plant. They can't run the unit for sure. And you can't run one unit efficiently. They say that at Diablo Canyon, that if only one unit is running for an extended period of time, it just doesn't make economic sense to keep it going. So if that one would go down, it takes, I think they said it takes about 13 months to replace this stator, and that's why they haven't done it. So
it's pretty clear they're not going to do it. I mean, they're not going to do it. Paul, are there any similar other reactors around the country that you can name that have major repairs that would prompt the owners to shut early?
Not early enough, though. I mean, for example, following the Fukushima Daiichi accident, there was a whole host of backfits that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff said needed to be done, particularly on these Fukushima-style reactors, the GE Mark I, Mark II boiling water reactors. And based on, the fact that right now a lot of reactors are, the cost of generating electricity at these plants is more than the cost that they can sell it for. So they didn't want to install the Fukushima backfits. That included Oyster Creek and the
in New Jersey
nuclear power station in Massachusetts, where they just they made up an excuse that they didn't need to install the backfit. In those two cases, it was because their containments don't work, as we saw, three explosions at Fukushima Daiichi. These Mark I containments don't work if they're challenged under severe accident conditions. And so the NRC was saying, you got to put a vent on it to save containment. That's a little like, the old Vietnam adage of blowing up the village to save it. Well, doesn't work, the last thing you'd think, would be to vent it, to defeat the whole concept so you can save the structure but poison the community. But the NRC let them get away with it. And, we've seen them back off, their regulations all the time. By the way, Oyster Creek, we're about to chalk up another nuclear power station shutting down in October of this year. Exelon Generation out of Chicago said that they were originally they got a relicense to go out to 2029. The state of New Jersey fought them to a standstill along with some interveners up there in New Jersey to replace sucking Barnegat Bay dry and boiling it with the coolant water out of the reactor to replace it with cooling towers. And Exelon said that they weren't, that they would close early in 2019. Well, now they just made the decision to close it even a year earlier. So the fights to close these reactors down earlier is a fight worth waging. And so Linda and Mothers for Peace and others out there are right on to keep up the struggle, even though these early closure announcements are happening. You can get them closed earlier.
Right. Linda, I know you have to run. Is there anything you want to throw at us before you got to go away about Diablo Canyon?
No, but I hope that you two talk about China today. I'm going to listen into the program on Friday, and I want to hear what you think about that. And
well, I get, okay.
Another thing is I want to say thank you, Harvey, and thank you, Paul.
Oh, thank you, Linda.
And,
no news.
That's a great work. And let's do that, though. I think it's a good suggestion. We're kind of crowing over the shutdowns, this wave of shutdowns, this tsunami of shutdowns. And we want to talk about, especially about First Energy and about the Cuomo bailout in New York. But, Paul, I cannot get a straight story on what's happening in China. We know they have 35 reactors there. We've heard that they're building somewhere between 20 and 25. When I Google atomic power in China, I get reports all over the map. I was told yesterday or 2 days ago by someone who's just been to China that they are not going to pursue any new reactors that are not under construction. Now, they do have about 20, as best I can tell, that are under construction. I have assumed that they're going to pursue those to completion. They're also talking, or they've just started to build a Westinghouse AP1000, which they said was going to be the keystone of their nuclear future. On the other hand, China is just exploding with renewable energy, and they have more or less succeeded in cornering at least much of the world market in photovoltaic cells, which is going to be a multi-trillion dollar business if it isn't already. Do you have any take on what's happening with nuclear power in China?
Well, Harvey, it's like uranium is the currency of a coin. The flip side is nuclear power, and the other is nuclear weapons. That's what I think is going on with these state-run nuclear programs, is that it's coupled to dominate the military side as well as the electric side. The latest news, demonstrates talking points heads, the talking heads point of same as it ever was. China just announced that they're delaying the AP1000 reactor under construction in China because of safety concerns. One thing you can count on if you're building a nuclear power plant is that you will never finish it on time, and you will never finish it on cost. And even these state-run programs in China are running into those same kinds of issues. I think that it's true anywhere. France started its mammoth nuclear power program with the idea of building a nuclear arsenal. The power was just a cover. True for India, true for Pakistan, the Soviet Union, even the United States, even before President Dwight Eisenhower announced the peaceful atom, the Atomic Energy Commission had put out a paper in 1952 to Monsanto. Detroit Edison, General Electric, Westinghouse, talking about a partnership between government and industry to provide nuclear materials for the nuclear weapons arsenal of the United States government and co-generate electricity from the thermal heat provided by that nuclear weapons production program. So the biggest hypocrite of all was this announcement of a peaceful atoms program when all along it was to marry industry and military to produce nuclear weapons and co-generate electricity in the process. And with the announcement of the peaceful atom program, the nuclear weapons arsenal just skyrocketed in this country. And it wasn't by happenstance. It was by design. So I really figure that what's going on in China is really the same thing, is that it's, the power piece is part of an overall program of where they're going to build everything: wind, solar, gas, coal, nuclear. It's fossil and fissile, as well as wind and solar. But the aim, again, is to become a superpower that can dominate with this whole issue of nuclear weapons.
Well, so we know that China is has got plenty of nuclear weapons. They do have 35 commercial style reactors. They had 20 to 25 under construction. And when we can get a straight story, I think they probably haven't decided either. There was a massive reevaluation, as you remember, Paul, after 3/11/2011 and when Fukushima. They put everything on hold for a while. I'm sure that they decided not to proceed with a lot of reactors that they assumed they were going to build. There is, as best I can tell, an anti-nuclear movement in China. We see China as this big, you know, completely dictatorship situation, but I'm not sure that's actually the case. I do think that people have been speaking out against atomic reactors in China. You see snippets of it here and there. So to answer Linda's question, I'm going to bet that there's 20 to 25 under construction, that a lot of those, as you say, Paul, that with the delays and the cost overruns, will never be finished. And but we still have plenty to worry about China. So every time we crow about shutting a reactor or two here in the U.S., we got to put it in perspective. There are other countries, Russia, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, that are building reactors, but none in the quantity that China is doing it. And if we can finally cut it off in China, I think we'll really be on the downhill slope. One thing that you and I emailed before the show, and I wanted to get to this before I lose track, the Nuclear Energy Institute in the United States has been the major propaganda arm for the atomic industry. It used to be the Atomic Industrial Forum. You mentioned to me that you see it falling apart. This is a pretty big deal. It sounds like the Trump White House here. Tell us, if you can, what you know about what's happening with Atomic Industrial Forum, now the Nuclear Energy Institute.
Well, the story is that the Nuclear Energy Institute has been, their claim has been that they are the one voice for the nuclear power industry in the United States. And recently came into question by the fact that two very large nuclear utilities that were members of NEI, NextEra, which is AKA Florida Power and Light, and Entergy, which is based out of New Orleans, both large nuclear utilities, unsubscribed their memberships because they argued that the NEI was in that it was It's sort of an odd argument, but these two utilities were arguing that the NEI was its policies and actions were actually undermining the marketability of nuclear power because, again, they've gone off the deep end with these bailouts that is in fact going to explode the market of electricity. To talk about, you know, having ratepayers bail out the most expensive way to generate electricity ever known, it's what NextEra is talking about, and they're big into solar as well as nuclear.
Well, that's the rub. These utilities aren't 100% nuclear, so
they're not 100%, and NEI is exclusively nuclear, and so because of the because these two utilities withdrew their membership. NEI retaliated against them. I mean, they were looking at, you know, like a $3 million membership that they had to cough up over at NextEra. And NEI was a little miffed when they withdrew from the herd, because it could start a stampede, in fact. What NEI did was they took some retaliatory action by not allowing them to enter into a database for parts and services that NextEra has now filed a lawsuit in court saying that when they signed on to the membership at NEI, this kind of extortion, as they call it, and it's named in the court case as extortion, was not a part of the original deal. And so we now have a former member and a large nuclear utility saying that this Nuclear Energy Institute is extorting its members like the mafia.
Not like the mafia, it is the mafia.
It is, it is the nuclear mafia. And so we've got a big rift that's opened up. And now Entergy has not disclosed publicly why they unsubscribed from the NEI membership. But we're watching very carefully now as this court case proceeds with a criminal element to it, and the impact that it's going to have on other memberships, other members in NEI. And, you know, you combine that with how the market is coming unglued for this industry, the costs are going skyrocketing. These plants are getting deteriorated, it's a very dangerous time. I understand we crow about this, but when you and I, Harvey, started off in the anti-nuclear movement, it was about construction, and clearly that would have been the best route to not build. But now, as we go downhill with this industry, it's going to get scarier.
So actually,
once the profit motive is lost, that's when the danger really begins.
So Entergy, which I think is the number two owner of nuclear plants in the United States, has left the trade.
They're suing
for extortion.
Well, it's NextEra, which is Florida Power and Light.
Oh, okay.
By the way, NextEra is the operator and owner of Seabrook, our alumni. And so they're the ones that have filed in court a charge that NEI has been extorting its members.
Well, you have to remember the next era with Florida Power and Light, which I assume is somewhere still connected now with this umbrella corporation, is the biggest developer of wind power in the United States. I mean, half the windmills in the United States.
That's the struggle. That's the struggle.
Wow.
Are these utilities, are they gonna take this albatross around their neck all the way to the bottom? And some of them are saying no. And some of them are even, well, NextEra has taken the lead to try to say, you know, we have other interests that, in fact, are affordable, that are sustainable. And I think that's what really led to them quitting the Nuclear Energy Institute, which, again, is the chief lobby on Capitol Hill, and it's also the architect and lobbyist in most of the state houses that are struggling to keep these uneconomical and aging nuclear reactors operating.
Well, that's an astonishing development. And you have to remember, of course, that NextEra, as we mentioned, is the biggest wind developer in the United States. And by the way, General Electric is the biggest manufacturer of wind turbines in the United States. But NextEra, or First Florida Power and Light, however it's currently arranged, owns four reactors in Florida, two at Turkey Point and two at St. Lucie. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You said something, though, that really perked me up here. You're saying that NEI controls a buying group for parts and services for nuclear reactors, and that
they're
not allowing?
Well, they control the list. They claim to control the list. So your subscription to the membership gets you into that database. And NextEra is saying that was never part of the deal. And to bring it up now is a threat to extort us of our for this membership money.
God, that's mind-boggling. It's really mind-boggling.
What it's showing is a big rift that's now opening up in the industry.
Well, obviously, a lot of these utilities, I don't know about Entergy, but as you know, FPL, clearly, not only wind, but also solar in Florida, where they're, you know, the voters of Florida turned down an attempt to kill the solar industry there. So, you know, obviously, this is a huge deal. Entergy and NextEra have to be in the top five nuclear owners in the United States. To see them fighting at the trade organization, that's really something else. And in a certain sense, you know, it's gratifying for us as opponents of nuclear power, but it's also terrifying to think that these people who are sailing a ship, the Titanic, with 99 active reactors on it, are now arguing amongst themselves as they head towards the iceberg. I mean, you know, that's pretty frightening. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think they've hit it already.
Right. Well,
they're pushing each other out of the lifeboat now.
Yeah, exactly. God. Well, speaking of which, we have one reactor complex left in the United States under construction. That's the two reactors at Vogtle. And in the Trump budget, Trump Putin here, has, $3.5 billion new loan guarantees. And plus $100-some million to re-up the Yucca license. Can you tell what's happening at Vogtle, Paul? I mean, I know you follow pretty closely in general, but do you have a good handle on this new loan guarantee deal?
Well, you know, again, this was one of the surprises in the Trump budget, but. Harvey, you know, I really think that it's not going to be enough. You know, what was it originally they were talking about, the two units at Vogtle 3 and Vogtle 4 would be $17 billion. I mean, that figure, that sounds like, you know, that's a lot, you know, that's, $8.5 billion apiece is what they were saying. But when the nuclear renaissance, as they call it, we've always called it the relapse. But
right.
they were saying that new reactors were going to be $1.5 billion. Well, now it turns out, you know, when they started off Vogtle 3 and 4, it was going to be $8.5 billion. Now it's up to, they're talking about $25 billion to finish these two reactors. But we know that the Attorney General's office in Virginia is saying that it's going to be $25 billion to finish one. So,
you mean in Georgia?
You know, we're seeing single units being proposed in Virginia where Dominion was saying, you know, they were going to build something for 12.5 at North Anna 3, and the Attorney General at the state of Virginia was saying, no, it's not going to be $12 billion. It's going to be $19 to $25 billion for a single unit. So the projected cost to finish Vogtle 3 and 4 at $25 billion, Harvey, you and I know that, you know, these guys are just holding on to a skyrocket right now, and their pants are coming off because it's going it's just going out of control. It's always been out of control. It was out of control at Seabrook in 1976 through 1991, and it has never changed. It is
right.
They're still holding this skyrocket of cost, and its path to completion is out of control as well. So, you know, for Trump to throw another, it's Trump change. It's
You're
like,
right.
you know, he just threw $120 million at Yucca Mountain for the same, you know, in the same, you know, that's like pennies in the wishing well to hell. It's not, you know, it's completely crazy that,
well,
you know, you
about...
think that any of these, you know, you can't throw money at nuclear power and expect to have it do anything but get burned. You know, that's what these things do. They burn money. And
well,
they burn
about
it
that
at incredible rates.
Let's talk about that in Ohio now. We have First Energy based in Akron, which owns four nuclear reactors, Davis, Bessie, Perry, and two at Beaver Valley. And they have now publicly essentially acknowledged that they're about to go bankrupt. And there's a hedge fund that wants apparently to buy First Energy on the condition that they shut these reactors. Have you followed this?
Yeah. I mean, again, there's, you know, this, you know, the nuclear industry is in a process of fragmentation right now. It's breaking up all, it's like looking at an ice field, you know, that's just cracking and floating away. That's what's happening now. The, you know, First Energy is still holding out that Ohio is going to provide them with a bailout. But that is becoming increasingly less likely, although we can count on the bailout fight to continue there and elsewhere. But, you know, they are talking about they're either going to close or they're going to try to sell Davis-Bessie. Selling Davis-Bessie, I don't see that happening. I don't see anybody buying into that much trouble. But they are trying to get out of the merchant market and into the utility. This trade that's about to happen is about becoming a regulated generator of electricity as opposed to a merchant. Because again, you can't sell nuclear power for the real cost that it takes to generate it. You've got to have you've got to have a way of passing on these exorbitant costs to the ratepayer as need be through politically controlled public utility commissions. So that's sort of how it rolls now. And so that's the, you know, that's the shift that we're seeing First Energy propose is to get out of the merchant plant market. But it's going to be a struggle. I really think that Davis-Bessey and Perry are well in line to be the next reactors to get shut down. It's going to be a fight, and people are going to have to take the irate payer pledge and become irate payers, where you're pissed off, and we're going to see rate strikes. That's I think the direction that needs to go is where people stand up and just say, I'm not going to take it anymore.
Well, shelf life now of these four reactors with First Energy seems to be very much in doubt. And I have to say, as a very long time Ohio resident, I am stunned that the Ohio legislature, which is overwhelmingly Republican, even though it's completely gerrymandered in the state, is 50-50 or even a little more Democratic. But if you'd have told me 5 years ago, that the Ohio legislature would deny First Energy bailouts for these reactors, I would have said, no way that they would. You know, but they have been stopped. Oh, my God, we're done. Paul Gunter of I'll Talk to You Again, Beyond Nuclear. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No nukes.
No nukes, buddy.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.